Hey, this is John and Toby, and you're listening to Mostly Harmless.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Mostly Harmless. I'm your host, Damn It Damien. Buddies, welcome back. This week we are hanging out, we are chatting with my new friends, Toby Poser and John Adams, who along with their daughters Lulu and Zelda make incredibly well-crafted indie films that have in recent years taken a turn more towards horror. Their last film, The Deeper You Dig, is now streaming for free on Amazon Prime. It's sitting with a really great 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. If you're a fan of Rotten Tomatoes, that's a pretty damn good score, especially for horror. This week, we're here to talk about their newest film, Hellbender, which is actually sitting even higher with a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. We're not going to talk at all today about Rotten Tomatoes. Instead, we're going to talk about this really awesome little horror movie that just premiered last week on Shudder's streaming service. I got a chance to check out an early screener of the film, and as I'm going to tell Toby and John over and over in this week's episode, I was really, really blown away with what they could do and what they did do with this little movie of theirs. I had no idea what I was walking into. Hellbender is this horror film that really takes on much more of like a 1970s Dario Argento classically themed fairy tale horror. Like it's got something to say, and it's got teeth, and it leaves you with more questions than it does with answers, but it leaves you looking inward for those answers, like so much of our great art does. I'm rambling, but really it's a damn cool horror film. It had a real cool foreign feel to it. It reminded me a lot of Dogtooth, if you guys have seen the movie Dogtooth, meets, Phantasm. I'm a big fan of the Phantasm movies and the dreamlike quality that takes place in those films. This had a lot of that dreamlike quality, where you didn't know what was real, what's not real, what's imaginary. It's real cool, but also at the same time, it's filmed like a documentary. It's real lo-fi, real small budget. It's got almost a Larry Clark kids kind of feel to it. That was really interesting to have in a horror movie such as this. I don't want to give away too much of the story, but it is a real cool story of a young girl who lives in the woods with her mother. They have a band together. They hang out. They're best friends. And then the world starts to fall apart once her daughter discovers that everything her mother's been telling her might not exactly be true. And this young woman starts to learn her dark purpose. Not really new ideas, but really I do like the dreamlike what the hell quality that the Adams brought to this lo-fi, authentic, raw film. I really, really liked it. It moved in real cool ways and explored some cool ideas that really kind of left me just like thinking about this movie for a real long time. So I'm such a big fan of this film that I've teamed up with Shudder, and we're going to be giving away a 6-month subscription to Shudder. Just sign up for MostlyHarmlessPodcast.com's email list, and you'll automatically be entered to win. But I also have a favor to ask of you guys. I'm always looking for really great indie horror flicks to check out late at night when the girlfriend's asleep, and I've been taking a little bit of my medicine, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Know what I mean? So please, let's get some voicemails involved in this. Let's get some callers to call in and leave us a voicemail. What's your most favorite indie horror film that you've discovered in the last couple of years? Give me a call at my Google Voice number. I won't answer this. Just leave me a message, 719-377-2411. Or you can email me at damien@mostlyharmlesspodcast.com. And you'll be thrown in the mix to win 6 free months of Shudder. So enough real rambling for me. This is a real fun chat. I really want to thank Toby and John for sitting down and their patience with me while I drink way too much coffee and tell them over and over again about how much I love this film. So let's go check out that chat. How are you guys?
Great. How about
you? How are you doing, David?
Doing great, thanks.
How's Denver?
I actually just moved out of Denver, as you can tell from this void. I just moved to Napa, California with my girlfriend. She just got a job out here. But I'm sure Denver's great, too. I miss it there already terribly.
We love Colorado so much. Telluride's one of our favorite film festivals and spots to go. And
I've had about 3 cups of coffee already today. So thanks for meeting me. I know it's late in the afternoon for you guys. It's 11:30 right here for me. I stayed up late last night watching The Deeper You Dig. So I'm on my 3rd cup of coffee. I'm going to ramble away. I have 5 pages of notes and ideas for questions, but really I just want to have a conversation with you two, if you guys are up for it.
We would love that so much. Absolutely.
I love interviewing people who are making kick-ass art. I hit up the guys at Shudder and was like, do you have anybody that you think would be cool for the show? And within moments, Kayla hit hit me back and was like, you have to see Hellbender.
Awesome.
I'd seen the trailer. What I like about the trailer is I watched it. I had no idea what the movie was about. So even though I'd seen the trailer, I sat down and watched the movie pretty much blind. Like I had no idea really what I was getting into. And I was blown away. I was really, really impressed by it. And I know if I may ramble for just another moment, like I actually feel bad saying impressed because, you know, so many of our friends have made movies and they're, you know, these homemade little indie films and they're cute for what they were. You never know what you're going to get into with like an indie horror on this kind of budget. But I was genuinely fucking blown away with what you guys were able to do with Hellbender. So I'm mostly this conversation is going to be me throwing compliments at you guys and hopefully that starts some nice conversations. But
catcher's mitt that I should get.
So what I'm curious about is you guys, there's a really, really wonderful New York Times profile that I don't want to copy, but I encourage anybody who's listening to this to go and check that out. Well, first off, I haven't even introduced you guys. Like we're just jumping right ahead of everything. Like, who the hell am I talking to today? Jeez, I need to lay off the coffee.
Well, I'm Toby Poser, but I'm an Adams.
Yeah, I'm John Adams, and we got two daughters, Zelda and Lulu. The four of us make up a little combat unit called Adams Family Films, and we've been doing this together for 10 years now. I just saw like a memory on Facebook. It was the beginning of our filmmaking journey, and so it's been just a hell of a lot of fun. And so we're glad we're sitting here today and you're jacked up on coffee and I'm jacked up on a lobster roll. So
lobster roll.
I just had it, which, and you know, pretty dangerous to get a lobster roll where we're from because we are a long way from a live lobster, but I saw it and I said, I'm going to try this. So I might be jacked up on some strange virus.
I'm jacked up on seaweed.
Oh,
yeah.
I hope for the veggies.
Yeah, that's boring.
This morning, as I'm, you know, consuming mass amounts of caffeine, I was thinking about you guys and I was thinking about my father. So my dad was this hoarder. He was always bringing home trash, like stereo equipment, you know, recording equipment, anything that he could find. And he had this mad scientist idea. He was going to start a recording studio in our furnished garage apartment. My dad knew nothing about recording or making music or anything. He just had this wild and crazy idea. All the kids, we would just roll our eyes at him. So when you came home and were like, we're going to make a movie, how do you get everybody on board with that? How do you make a movie?
You know what? With a big dose of ignorance, if you're lucky, because if you're ignorant, you're not in your head. And you just, I mean, ignorance really was bliss for us because it was I guess it was 12 years actually, because it was 2010. We bought an old RV and we took off for a year and we just learned the ropes. And if we'd thought too much, or tried too much to emulate what we thought making a film was going to be, I'm sure we would have failed. But instead, we were clueless and successful.
Yeah, and we started in like, basically, like we were living in Topanga, California, which is like in the canyons of LA. And so we did know a bunch of filmmaker and industry people. And so when we all decided, it's funny, we all decided at the same time, hey, we should make a movie together. The girl, Zelda was like 5. Lulu was 9, something like that, maybe 5 and 10. They wanted to be actresses. They were into the whole idea. So we all kind of did it together. And so I asked some filmmaker friends who I knew were in the industry. I was like, hey, how could 4 of us, 2 of us being little kids, make a feature film? And a great friend of mine was like, well, you can't. And I was like, oh, well, how about if we're gonna, then how do we do it? And he was like, okay, wow, that's a really interesting thought. And he gave me some great advice. He told me a good camera to buy, a good microphone. And our first movie was done with a really cheap but decent camera and a cheap but decent microphone. And like Toby said, if we had known how dumb we were, we never would have done it because we would have panicked. But suddenly a year later, after living in this RV, we had shot all this shit. And it's really funny because the circle of this story is that same friend from the industry a year later visited us in upstate New York and we had compiled our crazy ass movie together. And I was like, would you watch our movie and tell us what you think? And he sat silently throughout an hour and a half of our first movie without ever saying a word. Him and his wife just looked at it and we were like, holy shit. When it was done, he said, it's very French. She said, well, what's the plot? And I was like, what is a plot? What are you talking about? So anyway, I'm just reiterating.
It's something you bury your very bad movie in. Although that wasn't.
It wasn't a bad movie. It was fun.
No, but that it was a good movie.
Yeah. So I think all we're trying to say is what Toby said very simply in the beginning. We were ignorant and that was the beauty of it. And then we were supported by people on the festival circuit who were like, hey, cool movie. And that was fuel for the fire that got us into this career, was the people said, hey, there's problems, but do another one.
How much does a typical Addams Family movie, Wonder Wheel production movie cost, if you don't mind me asking?
Like as much as an LA producer's shoes, and we're talking sneakers.
Was it hard to convince your family to join in on such a crazy proposition?
Not at all. No, they were really game. They were 6 and 11 the first time we took off to make Rumble Strips, our first film. And they were so into it. I mean, we're on our 7th or 8th feature now since then. They're still, Lulu's out of college now, but when she's around, she's still involved. Zelda's super involved in it and has, you know, evolved to the place where she's also directing with us, and she's co-DP with John, and she's of course acting in them.
And now she's being asked to do films all where she's the boss of different ventures outside of us. So it's really cool to watch her trajectory as opposed to Toby and I's. You know, like as a family, we've moved together, but now we're starting to, people are picking at us.
And the truth is we, because our art and our life are so intermeshed, we kind of don't think about it anymore. It's just, it's really this wonderful symbiosis that's just there. So, and I think they enjoy it. And we have amazing adventures doing it. We have a lot of fun. And then the festival circuit, if you make the film and then get to travel around, it is like candy on top.
Do you still have the RV? Do you still travel around in that?
We sold the RV and then we actually bought another trailer to shoot Hellbender. We love living in trailers and dragging our lives behind us in a truck. It's a great way to live. It's a beautiful community out there that is a bunch of road pirates. And it's a great little society. I recommend it to anybody who hasn't done it. If you ever dream of doing RV life, it's really cool to drift.
I've done a little bit of it with punk rock bands. I imagine it's pretty similar, only instead of RV camps, it's whatever punk rock flop house you end up in. Who knows the people you're going to meet that night?
And that's what our motto is. We're Black Flag and get in the van. We love laughing that we're Black Flag. We only, you know, sleep on piss covered couches, you know.
If we're lucky,
that's my class.
Yeah, Get in the Van is one of my all-time favorite books. Where do you guys find this DIY ethos? Like, how did you figure this out? Is this something that you just found on your own, or was it something that was already there before you guys started making movies?
Again, I'm gonna say it's from Black Flag. It's from watching Greg Ginn and Henry Rollins and Kira and drive around in a van, put out their own albums, run SST records. And they found this kid in 1980. They found this kid in upstate New York who only was being showed Journey. And suddenly Gimme 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 crosses because some other grubby kid came through our town and I heard a piece of it. And I said, what is that? And he said, oh, that's Black Flag. And then he played me the Angry Samoan. And so here's this kid who had his entire life, everything, his whole worldview changed because these guys out in Southern California were doing it themselves. And they found me just through blood, sweat, and hard work.
What are some of the early things that you were making before you started making films?
Well, I came from the acting world. That was really my focus right out of high school. And I went to college and, you know, got into acting, you know, major and then started working on like movies and television shows and brought in off Broadway in New York City in the 90s. So I kind of came from it from there. And then when I kind of hit 40, we were living in Los Angeles and the roles had really started to wane and I was frustrated. And you take it from there.
I grew up with playing regional punk bands, party punk bands. And I worked really hard. I never made it on any kind of national level. I loved the regional couch tour though. It was a hell of a lot of fun. And then I got asked, because of my band, I got asked to be on like a reality TV show like called Rock and Roll Acid Test on the Fuse channel. And that was the introduction where music and film production kind of crossed paths. So I unknowingly begin to build up a resume of what I wanted to do, because I really loved seeing the production side of this TV show. And it was all about, you know, and I was meeting musicians, and I, in some strange sense, I had kind of made it in a very weird way, not in any big way, but suddenly I was in Los Angeles getting paid because I was like a musician. And that was really cool and interesting.
I loved Hellbender. It comes out in a couple weeks on Shudder. Shudder got the world premiere rights to that one. I watched it this weekend, was blown away. My very first note I wrote down, feels like a foreign film, has a classic horror film vibe. What's in the DNA of this film? Are these happy accidents that it becomes a foreign film, or is this a conscious effort to make something unique and different?
Well, I'll tell you, we had before the movie Hellbender, we had our band Hellbender.
That's right.
But the E's are sixes. So it's Hellbender, but with three sixes for E's. We kind of were starting to explore visually, like what this whole concept of a Hellbender was. We loved that, the idea of what is this fucking Hellbender? And so we started making music videos, and it just kind of naturally and organically presented itself that these were kind of witchy sort of badass things. And we started to make a movie with that in mind.
Yeah, and I think like the European note, I think we love European movies. So that to us is like a big compliment. Like we love European movies. We love Korean movies. We love Norway, all that whole area, the stuff that comes out of there. I think they're a little slower. Like I think European movies take their time and they're a little more art oriented. Like, and I think we really like that. However, we want to be entertaining. We want to the movie to bounce along. Like we don't love the idea. Like when someone says, "Oh, it's a slow burn," like that's not like the greatest compliment ever. Because we just would like it to be a nice burn, you know what I mean. And so we do love the pacing of European films, but we love the entertainment value of American films, especially and Korean films, especially in horror.
I'll add on to that too, that something I feel like when I watch a lot of cool independent European films is they don't seem to follow a set of rules that I think, I don't know, I won't say all American films do that because of course that's not true. But something we definitely try to do is not follow the rules, you know, other than that being our rule, which is have fun
and don't honor, follow the rules.
You know, honor the story. Yeah.
And don't follow the rules.
Yeah, that's what I liked about, I've only watched the two films now, Hellbender, and then also The Deeper You Dig. And what I liked about both of them is I turned them on with this one idea and it pivots in different unexpected ways. Do you guys script this out or is this improv? Does it happen on accident? How do you find the story that these movies take?
Super great question. And it's a combination. Toby's very, very good at writing out our meaty skeletons, so we know kind of what's going to happen from the beginning to the end. But when we get on set and we start filming, a lot is discovered, and so there are a lot of happy discoveries that don't change the structure of the story, but they change the DNA, the kind of like the I don't know, the finer points of the story. So a lot is discovered just by us being on set together. And I shouldn't even say set, because we don't have sets. We just, it's where we live. Like we shoot where we live. We shoot where we work. There really is no separation. Like we don't go anywhere to shoot. We usually are shooting in our backyard, in our forest, in our house. So it's like a lot of stuff is just done right there. And we discover a lot as we move along.
Yeah, that's a very old Hollywood kind of idea that you're doing in the modern age. You don't see it a lot. I think Mike Flanagan does it with his Netflix stuff a lot, where he uses a lot of the same people, his wife and family and whatnot. Do you guys ever get tired of each other? How do you separate the work from your home life?
It's not work. That's the answer. So there's no separation because none of us are sitting around feeling like we're working. We're all kind of laughing.
But also I would say we're so busy working. Like I would say we do work, but we're so busy working that we don't, because we're kind of this 2-4 person ant farm, 2-4 ant farm. It's just like, I think built into us by now that our work is our life, and we tend to have fun with our life. So that means our work tends to be fun too. And we kind of don't have time to like think, oh God, I'd rather be doing something else. Instead, it's like, oh, we got to build something so we can shoot in the snow and try to get done to submit to Fantasia in time, you know?
How do you know when something's done?
That is also a great question. No one's ever asked us. And I think that's one of the most important questions about any art is when is it done? And I don't know, when do you think we're done?
I think eventually we reach a point where we just say we should be done because we want something else to work on. We're already like thinking we have something new we usually want to jump into. And at some point we have to just make a decision. You know what?
It's over.
It's presented itself. I don't think we need to fuck with it anymore.
Doing art, whether it's music or painting or film, it's a super dangerous thing to be a perfectionist because sometimes you don't get anything done if it needs to be perfect. And so with Deeper You Dig or with Hellbender, with anything we've done, we all know that there's flaws and we recognize them. But we have to say, but it's done. Like, this is the best we could do. And we're flawed and we're not perfect and we're not genius. And we're just regular people that love doing this. And so it's like, you have to accept that it's going to be like that. You know, we are not the Beatles and we're never going to be the Beatles. And that's totally okay. Being the Minutemen is cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of really wonderful. That's who made a difference to me. Sorry to keep referring to 80s bands, but
A lot of my audience will recognize and be very thankful for those 80s punk band references. So,
you know, it's funny. Like, I still listen religiously to all that stuff I grew up on, and like I was just listening to the Meat Puppets just a second ago as we were driving to town, and I'm like, it's so beautiful how sloppy some of their stuff is, yeah. But it's perfect. So that's a circle back to what you just said is, when are you done? Yeah. Well, the Meat Puppets were done. I remember watching the Meat Puppets and having the crowd in New York City throw shit at them and curse at them and spit at them. And all it did was made the Meat Puppets play longer. And I also remember that I thought to myself, okay, these guys are the biggest rock stars I've ever seen in my life because they don't give a fuck. And this was in New York where, you know, there was like skinhead mentality and they had long hair and overalls and they were probably tripping on acid and they just didn't give a shit. And so that's when art is done.
One thing that really blew me away with Hellbender and the Deeper You Dig were the performances. You guys are really good. There's some really, really like wonderful actors out there who don't have as convincing characters as you guys have had in these small little films that you guys have made. How do you guys create these characters? How are you so good at acting in these films?
Oh, thank you very, very much. Because we're also directing and writing them, I will say that we tend to feel these characters incredibly deeply because we're living them, like literally living them. You know, not only are we writing these characters, but we're portraying them, we're directing them, you know, we're producing them, we're shooting them, we're behind the camera when we're not in front of the camera. I would say there's something that is so integrated with who these characters are that I think we just have kind of a deep understanding of them. And also, I think we write characters we really want to play. Like for instance, right now we're working on something that takes place in the 1930s, this family on a carnival circuit. I'm playing a character named Maggie, and I've always wanted to play Maggie. She's just kind of this tough as nails, brawny Bruno type serial killer.
But child, beautiful lover.
And she's, yeah. You know, after like the Deeper You Dig and then with Hellbender, two and kind of intense roles at times, I was like, I want to have some fun in this next one. Nice. And I do.
Yeah, I also don't think we stray too far from who we are. You know, we're all circular people. And I think in all of our characters, we don't stray too far away. Like, I'm not trying to be Batman or something huge. It's like, I'm pretty anchored to who I kind of am a lot. So that helps. But thank you for that compliment that you like our acting. I mean, that's incredibly nice of you. So thank you so much for saying that.
I've got friends who have made movies and, you know, their acting is, you know, bless their hearts, as, you know, my grandmother would say. But when I watched you guys, it felt authentic. It felt real. It didn't look like I was watching people acting. It looked like I was watching people inhabit things. I was really incredibly impressed. So again, more compliments. I'm just going to shove your way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's fuel to our fire. And it's an incredibly nice thing of you to say. It's something we think a lot about and hope that we do not look like we're acting. So.
And we learn a lot from each other. Like Zelda, who plays Izzy in Hellbender, is just such a joy to act opposite, because she's just so intense and natural and good. And Lulu, her older sister, plays Amber, the blonde in Hellbender. And she brings something else to the table too. So we have fun and we're good. We learn from each other. And we also, the kids especially are good at, they're our bullshit monitors is what we call them. So they're really good at saying, I don't think you did that very well. Do it again.
Yeah, like they will straight up be like, that was so phony. Do you really want to be phony? It's like, oh my God, okay. Let me try it again.
You know, one of the notes I had written down was like, how do they keep each other honest? But it's been so long since I've like spent a good amount of time with my close family that I forgot about, like, we're always calling each other on each other's bullshit. Jeez, that's such a good, maybe I should call my brother and sister and work with them more.
It can be painful. I'll tell you what, like if I do an edit and I bring it to the family, because I do a lot of the pre-edits, like I'll edit up a scene, like try to get it 70% done, and I'll show it to everybody. And it takes, like, just for a minute of footage, it takes a week to edit. And I'll bring it to them and be like, so what do you think before I kind of finish it up? And if somebody's like, it's not very good, it can be so painful, because you know they're right. They're not doing it to hurt your feelings. They're doing it because it's true. And it can be painful to hear the hard truth, but I think that it cuts out a lot of wasted time.
What's it like when you guys go and look back at something like Rumble Strips, your first film? How proud are you of the work and how much it's grown? Can you see how much it's grown?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's funny. Like, it's grown, but in some ways it hasn't grown, which I also really am proud of, because like John and I this morning, were both of our girls are in New York City. So we're like, oh, let's get some shooting done, just the two of us. And so we were out there in, you know, 18 degree weather in the snow, working on these literal icebergs.
That in our underpants.
Yeah. Like in, you know, threadbare 1930s clothing, shooting. And we were like, man, nothing has changed. And I'm so happy. I'm miserable, but I'm so happy.
No, you were miserable.
No, the cold is miserable.
Yeah.
But
we were a little miserable.
But I'm happy.
Yeah. I think it's fun to see the evolution of the movies. I think we want to be better. We want to be entertaining. Movies are here to be entertaining. Music's here to be entertaining. You know, that's why I like listening to good music or looking at good art or watching a good movie. I like to be entertained. And so we would like to be better entertainers. So it's important to us to go to festivals, to talk to you, to read reviews, to see what we're succeeding at and what we are failing at. Because in the end, we do want to entertain people.
We're here today to get people to tune into Shudder and to watch Hellbender that comes out February 24th. It hits Shudder. Hellbender is based on the band your family has. How did Hellbender the band get started?
So as parents, we've always said we want to be friends to our kids. The friendship is what's most important. I come from a music world. I wanted to share music with my kids. I've been in bands with my kids since they could stand on a stage and hold the microphone. And Zelda actually really took up the music thing a lot and started playing drums. And so we started a band called Kid California. And we actually started doing live shows. And she was a young kid. And it was hilarious because I was singing completely inappropriate punk rock stuff. And there's this little kid behind me banging away on the drums. People loved it. I'm surprised we weren't arrested. but we made it. And then as she grew up, she started to say, hey, I think I don't want to play drums as much as I would like to sing. And she also started to bring more of her influences to the writing process. So we really began to kind of meld our ideas. And then Toby was like, hey, you know, I kind of want to sing in the band too. And then Lulu also wanted to sing in the band. So we became a four piece, and we just started, I don't know, things really came together as Hellbender. Like, we really started to find a sound, whereas previously we had a lot of crazy different sounds. And we really refined our sound as Hellbender. And because of that, it became a movie. And it was a neat process because, in a sense, I don't like to say this in public because I don't really like musicals, but we did set out to make a musical. And we did kind of make a musical, but don't tell anybody except for everyone listening to this podcast. But it's like, that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to make a musical about this band that we, you know, that we loved the music. And then we just came up with this fake idea about what it was. So it was pretty hilarious.
And the whole family writes all the music?
I write a lot of the music, but the whole family brings to the table, like, you know, Zelda plays drums. She can bring an instrument to it, so she can add musically. Yeah. But Toby and Lulu bring lyrics. They also bring harmonies. They bring their own style. And we all are relentless DJs to each other driving down the road. Like, we are always like, here, listen to Pigs, Pigs, Pigs. You know, Zelda's always playing us
Courtney Barnett.
It's like, you know, there's all these, and Toby's being like, no, it's got to be more like Nick Cave. And then Lulu's got all these crazy kind of like disco dancing kind of stuff. That's really cool too. So everyone's bringing a lot of influences to the table. But in the end, I sit around for a little while and I get the music down. And then we all talk about it and sing on it.
Talking about the movie a little bit more. Again, I came to it, I'd watched the trailer, but really the trailer is pretty ambiguous. Is that on purpose?
That's a great question. And so the truth is we've always cut our own trailers. And in this instance, we did not cut our trailer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So somebody else cut the trailer. We got approval. They were like, hey, is this good? They gave us the first cut. And it was like, holy shit, that's really wild and cool. And yes, we approve. I don't know. What do you think? Tell us what you think. Like, tell us why you think that the trailer and the movie are different.
It's not so much that it's different. It's so, you know, to get a little too highfalutin, sometimes I think you have to tune into a movie. You know, I can't just watch a Marvel movie and then turn this on. I think the trailer can be kind of like a sampler of sorts, and it can kind of help trick your brain into tuning into the right frequency. And I think that's kind of what the trailer for Hellbender does, is it kind of makes you go, oh, okay, this is the ride I'm about to get into. It's going to feel like this. This is the feeling I'm going to get from this movie. But it also keeps everything kind of a surprise. It kind of keeps it still in a box of what it's going to be, so that you're still surprised when you're watching it and this thing opens up and reveals this really kind of cool, you know, haunted fairy tale that you guys made.
Oh, no, that's great.
Something that's interesting is the band element is not in the trailer at all.
Yeah.
So that'll be something that if people see the trailer going into the movie, they won't have any clue that it's actually about a mom and daughter who like rock out on a mountaintop.
Yeah. And yeah, that's a cool surprise in that as well. It felt organic in a way that you spend all your time on this mountain protecting the daughter character. What are you guys going to do in your spare time? Well, let's start a band.
Well, that's what's funny about it is we do live on a hill and we do entertain ourselves by playing in the basement in our band. Yeah. So it's kind of like, again, it's not very far from the truth. We don't eat people. That's the only thing that we don't do. That they do.
You don't know what I do when you close your eyes at night.
Well, I'm still here, so that's good.
So for people who are looking to sit down and maybe watch this movie when it hits Shudder, what should they be prepared for? How should they tune themselves in?
Don't prepare yourself at all. Just sit down and watch it. I think that that's the best way. And hopefully you'll enjoy our little ride that we laid out. It was a joy to make. And, you know, when you talk about music, one of the things that we talked a lot about was, so you watched The Deeper You Dig last night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things we learned from The Deeper You Dig was people were really interested. Critics and audience members were like, oh, I would have really liked to have seen the daughter-mother relationship more developed. And so we really set out to do that with Hellbender. We were like, cool, if that's what people want, that's really great, because these guys do have a great relationship. And the other thing about the difference between The Deeper You Dig and Hellbender is The Deeper You Dig is a pretty heavy movie with not a lot of lightness or fun. And we definitely, you know, wanted to have more fun. And we thought music would be a great way to drive the fun fact of the movie. And it would also split up the movie into three chapters, because there's three live, you know, events where they're playing together. And in a way that splits the movie up into chapters. It shows their development and their evolution as characters through the music. And we thought that that would be fun. And so we hope people enjoy that aspect of it.
I'll be honest with you guys. I enjoy a little bit of medical marijuana from time to time. Granted, I was on drugs when I watched Hellbender, but it definitely felt like I was on drugs.
Oh, thanks. I have a funny story. Oh, it looks like
No, go ahead.
In Hellbender, you know, the mom always sneaks up and opens up this little like china, you know, bowl, and you learn that she's eating maggots, you know, and she's getting ripped on them. That's actually the very thing that I used to stash my weed in years ago. you know, it's the very thing, you know, that I would stash. And so that was kind of like a little love note to my past stoner self. Nice. When the kids were little.
And we are definitely referencing magic mushrooms and acid trips in these visions. I mean, in one scene, while they're walking and talking about the magic, it just focuses on a mushroom. And there's a reason for that. It wasn't just because, hey, look at the pretty mushroom. It's like, we want people who have experienced, you know, drug use to try to open their minds or close their minds, whatever they're trying to do, to relate to these characters, because this is the mother especially is someone who messes with her mind. You know, if people watch it and think like, ooh, this reminds me of an acid trip, because that's, you know, what's interesting about acid trips or getting high or things like that is people do it a lot of the time so they can go outside of themselves. They can experience something. They feel like they're opening up something and experiencing something that comes from the outside instead of everything from the inside. I don't know whether scientifically that's true or not, but that's why you do it. We hope people, when they see that stuff, are like, I know that feeling.
Well, guys, I've kept you guys for way too long. Thank you so much. Is there anything that we missed about Hellbender or your family that you would like to share? That,
you know, we're actually going to be releasing a soundtrack. It's going to be released from Hellbender, a soundtrack from the movie with songs that didn't make it in the film, but that are really great. And that's going to be out later this spring. Ship to Shore is released in that, and it's going to be on vinyl, and it's going to be really cool.
We're on wax, yo!
I will probably pick that up, because this is a music podcast. I mean, do you guys mind if I play a Hellbender track at the end of this episode?
That would be honor. So nice of you. Hell yeah.
What should we play?
I think Tiny Little Pieces.
Tiny Little Pieces is like kind of the sound that we're really... Our next movie is going to have that sound. Blood on the Stone is a nice heavy one. It depends. Hollow is a beautiful, simple little song. It depends on what your vibe is. But the heavy ones are Blood on the Stone and Tiny Little Pieces.
You can find this on Spotify. Yeah. Where else?
iTunes.
Hellbender is going to be out on Shudder February 24th. The Deeper You Dig is out on Amazon Prime right now. And I really enjoyed the hell out of that too. But I can't wait to watch Halfway to Zen and your other films. Where can people find the other films?
On our website, which is WonderWheelProductions.com.
And they're also all on Amazon.
Because you guys made and produced these, you guys are getting, like, if I go and buy this off of Amazon, you guys are getting the money, right?
Yeah, and it's something that I have to say is really kind of wonderful. I know a lot of people like to beat up big corporations like Amazon, but little artists like us, actually, our stuff gets seen and we do make money from it. And it's really a great venue for us, to be honest.
Guys, thanks so much for hanging out. Anything else?
No, thanks.
Just
David.
A huge thank you and a great conversation. Yeah. And it's fun to be on a music podcast. Yeah. Like, that was so cool. Like, when we were, this meant a lot to us. So thank you so much.